Welcome to episode 228 of the G2 on 5G. It's the latest inside scoop on everything 5G. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes. It's brought to you by More Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, and joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. Let's get started with my first topic, and I want to talk about Trump Mobile launching a gold 5G service. But the question is it solid gold, my friend? And hey, we're going to follow the rule of thumb that we don't talk about politics. We don't weigh in with our opinion on that, or religion, or sex. That's the three things that you don't talk about at a cocktail party. But let's examine this service. So it was just launched. It comes with an unlimited plan at a cost of cleverly derived $47.45. That represents, obviously, the fact that Trump is the 45th and the 47th U.S. president. Now, initially, there's no equipment, but there are plans for a golden-hued Trump T1 phone, which is going to feature an Android 15 operating system, a 6.8-inch touchscreen with 120-hertz refresh rate at a price of $499. Now, hey, you know, this is an MVNO. It's being supported by all three carriers, although the website doesn't specify who those are, but we can guess who those folks are, AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon. And other than that, they are touting that customer service will be based in the United States. But beyond that, there isn't a lot of substance that I see to this. So what are your non-political tinged thoughts about this? You're speechless, I know.
There's a thing called the Hatch Act, violating that wildly. So ignoring all of the massive violations of the law and how this is just bleeped out. I don't know how else to say it. It's just another grift. I don't see there being anything of any value here for anyone outside of the Trump circle of influence. I can't say that I would recommend this to any consumer. It's to be using T-Mobile's network to show coverage, which makes sense because T-Mobile has the best coverage for 5G. It just, I don't know. It just seems like a grift, yet another grift. The phone is a Chinese phone.
Is it really?
Oh, for sure. Here's the thing. You cannot manufacture a phone rapidly, especially a branded one, without using a Chinese white label OEM. I heard that they were supposedly going to use some other company to do the software and the hardware in the US eventually. But the truth is that in order to build a proper smartphone, 9 times out of 10, you are going to be building it in China. I would say right now that this is just another way for the Trump family to enrich themselves to no real benefit to consumers.
Yeah, there isn't a lot of substance to this. It will be interesting. And if it is a Chinese handset,
if it ever happens.
That would fly in the face of the convention, I think, of what they're trying to do here. Now, this was a Mobile World Live article. I mean, it's been all over the news, obviously, but it was interesting. At the end of the article, Mobile World Live speaks to the fact that a financial disclosure form filed on the 13th of January reflected that President Trump has generated more than $600 million in revenue and income from selling eventually this 5G service, but this includes Trump branded watches. I've seen those. Bibles, shoes, fragrances, and a coffee table book. Now, Hunter Biden was taking advantage of dad in office and selling finger paints for unreasonable sums of money as well. But yeah, it's interesting. There isn't a lot of value here. It'll be interesting to see what handset materializes. They say it's going to come in the next couple of months. But yeah, I thought we had to hit it. From my perspective, this is electroplated gold. It's not solid gold. But hey, let's move to a more positive topic, your first topic. And you had an extended weekend with your daughters and your wife, and you were testing satellite service on Father's Day. So I want to hear your input here because I plan to do this with some demo equipment that I have when I'm in Utah at the end of July doing a Ford performance driving school, but I'll let you take it away.
So I will tell you the beta is over, so you're going to have to pay for the service. I managed to sneak in right before the beta was over on T-Mobile. But yeah, it was really interesting because I fully took as many devices with me as I could. I don't have a bunch of the same device, so not all of the devices actually were satellite compatible. For example, the Pixel device I had is a Pixel 9a. That doesn't have satellite connectivity, but the Pixel 9 does. That was already a fail on my part, but also a fail on their part, because I think there's not enough devices that support these satellite services yet, and it's a very small number of devices, mostly the newest flagships. So that's something to consider with this whole satellite discussion, is that we need to have this in all devices, not just the flagships. Now, my T-Mobile experience was interesting because it automatically switched to the satellite service for me as I was driving in and out of coverage. When I left cell coverage with T-Mobile, it told me, hey, you're now on T-Mobile satellite. Just enjoy messaging, and here's your service.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, once I got to the campsite, the service wasn't really working. Like, I wasn't able to send messages. I wasn't really getting messages. Then the next morning on Father's Day, I woke up to a bunch of text messages thanks to the satellite messaging. But I was not sleeping outside. I was actually in the cabin because we went to the cabin. So it actually works indoors, which I was really surprised by, because I was under the impression that it needed to be outdoors and have some kind of a view of the sky. I also had a Verizon device with me, an iPhone 16 Pro, which does have satellite messaging thanks to Apple and Verizon. But that required me, one, to be outdoors. Two, it required the cell network to not be operational. And the problem was that Verizon actually did have coverage there, but it was so poor that I never got a message out. So I struggled to get any texts out at all, whether it was over satellite or over cellular, because I was always like edging between the 4G network and the satellite, which was the problem. And then I did have an AT&T device with me, but it wasn't an AT&T certified device for satellite. But one of my friends had an iPhone and he was able to use it. And one, he was able to use it in the woods, which was where we were staying, where we were sitting. So he didn't have to find a clearing like you have to do with the Apple service. But also what was really interesting was he was like, yeah, like it just worked. Like I didn't have to align it for anything. It just worked. So I would say AT&T, T-Mobile definitely had a good experience. And it's cool to see, because actually my friend who had the AT&T service found out through a text message he got on the campsite that his landlord was coming by to do some kind of inspection, and he wouldn't have known to come home earlier if he didn't have that text message. So I wouldn't have had my friends and family wishing me happy Father's Day. He wouldn't have known about his landlord. So it's really nice to have these satellite services that aren't necessarily for emergency use cases always. But I was also thinking, if my car broke down on these mountain roads where I have no cell service, it would have been totally like, my mind was like, this is minimum just for roadside assistance in mountain areas like this. I'm pretty satisfied with the experience that I had. There's room for improvement. I think not all solutions are equal. More devices should be supported. And I will have my thoughts on this coming up pretty soon. I already typed up an outline of what I want to say. So it'll be probably in the next week or so. But yeah, I think overall, great experience. Only thing that's a big bummer is that I dropped my S25 Ultra in the lake while skiing. My testing was limited to a day of service due to my own.
You had a lot of fun, it sounds like. You're on jet skis. That's pretty cool.
And I got a good tan.
And you got a good tan. Cool. We're going to continue this theme with my second topic. And I want to talk about a recent announcement between AST Space Mobile and Vodafone collaborating for direct-to-device connectivity in India. And we've talked about AST Space Mobile numerous times on the podcast. And it's no secret. We've also talked about the fact that both AT&T and Vodafone and Google have made investments in AST Space Mobile as they continue to launch their Bluebird satellites and continue to build their constellation. So I just want to provide a quick overview of what was announced. So this is actually Vodafone Idea, which is Vodafone's operating business unit in India. And to no surprise, they're partnering with AST Space Mobile. They're leveraging what AST Space Mobile is doing from their satellite broadband platform perspective. We have talked about that in the past. And the initial focus, India is a huge market, right? Over 1.1 billion people. Companies like Reliance, Jio have done a fantastic job using software-defined technology with Core and RAN and Open RAN to quickly deploy both LTE and 5G networks. But those are in major metropolitan areas, highly densely populated urban centers and that sort of thing. And so there's still a rural digital divide, just like there is in the United States. So Initially, this focus is on expanding connectivity in rural regions, and it is definitely a partnership. So obviously, with AST SpaceMobile managing the satellite, the integration with that infrastructure, and then what Vodafone Idea will be doing is obviously managing the integration with terrestrial spectrum and that sort of thing. So nothing earth-shattering from that partnership, but this just further demonstrates the strength of the relationship between both AST SpaceMobile and Vodafone Group in expanding into supporting India and rural use cases. There may not be much more for you to comment on, but what are your thoughts here?
No, I think that's about it. It's great to see more connectivity access across the world. And I think there's always room for improvement, and satellite seems to be the right way to reach the most people. The problem is that I think that there's a cap on what you can really do today. And I want to make sure that people don't overestimate what satellite can do, and that satellite is not the only solution, nor is fiber, nor is FWA. It's a combination of all three. Copper is dead.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. I think what you shared, your experience doing the testing over Father's Day weekend is a good example of that. So it's still nascent, and it's going to take time for companies like AST SpaceMobile, Starlink, what Amazon is doing as well, and then the narrowband IoT use cases like Satelliot and others that we've talked about as well, to get the proper constellation coverage in low Earth orbit to make all this a reality. But it is very promising. Again, it's going to play a critical element in bridging the digital divide, especially in very lower populated parts of the world. So exciting stuff. And that's going to unlock a lot of use cases around agriculture technology. And you and I have talked about that many times on this podcast. But with that said, let's go to your second topic. And you want to talk about T-Mobile and their partnership with the WPGA.
Yes. So there is the WPGA Championship in Frisco, Texas this weekend.
Yeah.
It actually starts today.
Yeah, North Texas.
And this will leverage, this is a continuation of T-Mobile's partnership with the PGA, the WPGA, and just in general with golf. And what they're trying to do is be a showcase for the future of golf technology. This is a combination of all kinds of new technologies and features that the PGA wants to implement in partnership with T-Mobile and their 5G advanced network solutions. So they're doing a autonomous driving range ball picker that uses 5G to connect to AI and automate ball collection. So you don't have to have a person out there doing that anymore.
But it was always fun to try to hit that person with a golf ball when you're teeing off, right?
Sure. But it's cheaper not to have to pay a person, and safer.
True.
And then you have a real-time swing analysis that uses 5G through Sportbox AI coaching tools. There's a mixed reality putting simulator that connects golfers to the PuttView system through 5G to help golfers train their short game in new ways. And then there's an AI-powered video highlight thanks to autonomous video system from Real Golf. They use T-Mobile's 5G to connect smart cameras that capture tee to green shots at hole 10. So there's that plus all the broadcast stuff that they're doing to enable smoother broadcasts, lower latencies. Interesting, it's on the 10th, 12th, and 15th holes. So it's not on every hole, but I think that the later holes tend to be the more challenging ones and the ones people are more interested in. But yeah, they're talking about how women's golf is growing and how enabling better broadcasts in a partnership with KPMG, who's like the big sponsor, to improve the fan experience, but also improve the broadcast. And I think T-Mobile is really leaning in on golf as a sport that they enable. And we know Mel went to see what they're doing a few weeks ago and wrote about that on Forbes. But there's a lot going on with T-Mobile and golf. They also had the Sail GP, which we talked about last week. I still wish I had gone to that, but T-Mobile was really showing how they can enable better broadcast experiences for all kinds of sports. Obviously, they're not as closely tied to the NFL as Verizon is, or the NHL as Verizon is. Everybody's got to pick their leagues and their sports. And T-Mobile also has a lot of stuff on F1. So it's really exciting to see growing leagues and new technologies enabling that growth with T-Mobile.
Yeah, so I think they're purposely picking things like F1 and golf. And here's why I think they are. So when you look at the NFL and you look at the NBA and you look at the NHL, typically These are in venues or Major League Baseball. These are in venues that already have the requisite infrastructure in place, right? Wi-Fi, fiber, that sort of thing. But when you contrast that with golf, with F1, with NASCAR, what ends up happening is some of those venues do have infrastructure, but a lot of them do not. Like Circuit of the Americas in Austin has fiber infrastructure. They built a not a private network, but they've invested in and ran and that sort of thing. But in a lot of, like for the WPGA and the PGA, these are at country clubs that don't have the requisite networking infrastructure. And so this is where I think 5G really shines. So that's my hypothesis there. That's why I believe T-Mobile is being selected. But let me ask you a question. You may not have dug deep enough into this particular announcement to answer the question. And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I did read in the announcement that there were some new sort of unique broadcast capabilities that they're planning to showcase in Frisco over the weekend. Did you pick up on anything that was net new relative to what they've already been doing with the PGA?
Yeah, they said it'll be advanced T-stats like ball speed, shot apex, and distance in the live broadcast. They'll have real-time data and be able to demonstrate that on the broadcast as opposed to in the past or as a replay, which is cool.
That is cool. Okay, cool. Yeah, I didn't catch that, so I appreciate you clarifying that. Cool. Hey, let's go hit my third and final topic quickly, and I want to talk about Nokia. And they dropped an announcement yesterday around their launch of an autonomous network fabric and what they think it can do to help customers accelerate network automation. Let me back up a little bit. I've been spending a lot of time with Nokia. I think I've spoken about this possibly on other podcasts, but they commissioned the firm and myself to examine what they're doing with their autonomous networks platform. And so the result of that was a paper that you can find on the More Insights and Strategy website. There are also two follow-up analyst insights where I went a little bit deeper. I believe one was within what they're doing for security, and the second, I believe, was automation. But what I really like about their most recent announcement is that what they're doing is they're very focused on a fabric. And so for our viewers and listeners that aren't familiar with what fabrics are, typically a fabric, it's a network layer, but then there's integration into that layer. And primarily it's security. And you're seeing this happen with a lot of infrastructure providers. I was just at Cisco Live last week, shameless plug for my Forbes article that posted yesterday. If you're interested in learning more about what broke at Cisco, because there was a ton of stuff that was announced around agentic AI, go read that on Forbes. But with respect to network automation, this is what agentic AI is all about. It's about agents. So it's moving from generative, which is that natural language interface co-pilot thing that I think everyone's been kicking the tires on, whether it's Grok or it's ChatGPT or whatever. It's pretty amazing, right? But the whole notion of agents and having agents, and again, this is AI, using data to train agents to work with other agents. In the future, you're going to have super agents that are interfacing with other agents. That opens a whole challenge with respect to identity access management and permissioning and that sort of thing. But there are companies like Cisco's Outshift organization that are focused on the Internet of Agents. Nokia is also focused on this as well. But basically what this does is you're integrating security into the networking layer that creates a fabric. And on top of that, you start imbuing that with agentic AI, and that can drive automation at scale. Because again, you're removing the way that I like to position it is you are removing humans from the loop, but humans are on the loop. So in other words, humans aren't managing the task. So allow AI to do that at speed, but be on the loop so that you can monitor that. You can ensure that it's properly within guardrails. There are also tools that allow you to do that as well from a security and a connectivity standpoint. But I really like what Nokia is doing. So they launched their autonomous network platform. It's been a year plus. Just yesterday, they're launching a fabric that should, in my mind, accelerate automation. And the final thing I'll leave our viewers and listeners with is that they do believe that by 2026, that they expect, and there wasn't a lot of detail behind this, but I guess based on a current customer proof of concepts and early preview and the feedback that they're getting, they're expecting to see the adoption curve ramp pretty significantly by 2026. Do I agree with that statement? What I have seen over the last several years, because I also focus on enterprise networking infrastructure, that for the longest time, network operators have wanted to monitor that. They wanted the easy button. They weren't comfortable fully automating that sort of thing. But as AI proves itself, slowly, as I speak with customers now, they're basically deploying automation to handle some of those highly repetitive, non-value-added tasks. And so I believe that Nokia's ambitions are reasonable. It'll be interesting to see what really transcends here. But on a final note, what I'll also mention too, in addition to what I mentioned with the agents and the security integration of the network layer, what Nokia is also doing is focusing on cross-domain correlated data products, telco-trained models, both large language models, smaller language models, and machine learning. And they're also integrating security in all this. So it's pretty exciting. The whole promise of agentic AI is pretty exciting. And again, if you want to learn a little bit more about what I discovered at Cisco Live, go hit my Forbes link. But with that said, what do you think? Do you think Nokia's ambitions are going to be too aggressive here to get to this by 2026?
I think that they probably will, but it's a question of whether or not they'll get customers.
Yeah.
Or if it's mature enough. But I do think it's interesting that everybody has some kind of a fabric nowadays.
Fabrics are sexy again.
Fabric is the new hotness. I think the word fabric has lost its meaning. But nonetheless, I do think a lot of these networks are AI accelerated, and it definitely seems like AI is at the core of everything. And that kind of leads me into our next topic. So I'll stop there.
Yeah, no, that's great. Take it away, my friend. I've spoken too much.
Yeah, right now we're seeing a lot of activity on 6G, and we are really getting into the point where everybody's talking about 6G in some kind of meaningful manner. So it's a little bit less hype now. There was recently a 3GPP plenary in Prague through its technical specification group, TSG. Mm-hmm. That happened a week ago, and it's when they started to actually discuss the work, the study items, and really get into the nitty-gritty of what 6G should be. There will be a normative specification that will happen in 2027, and the first 6G specification will be frozen around December of 2028, and the expectation is that commercial 6G launches will happen in 2029. So we're about 4 years away from the launch of 6G, but there are going to be gateways along the way and checkpoints, if you want to call them, to understand where we're going. But I also wanted to add some other topics. There's a MIT just came out last week with a photonics processor that could streamline 6G wireless process signal processing, and that would allow for faster. They're saying the photonics chip is 100 times faster than its next best digital alternative, while converging about 95% of accuracy in signal classifications. This is a big thing for much faster networks, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Also, in addition to that, the NIST, which is the National Institute for Science and Technology, they're also talking about 6G and how they want to see things evolve. And the three core things that they're talking about are propagation and spectrum metrology, open architecture security and AI, and using the network as a sensor, which I think is really interesting because you could use that for things like autonomous robots and drones and all kinds of things that might be able to be positioned more accurately with the network through triangulation and really low latency networking, which leads me to an article that I saw yesterday, which was about China leveraging 6G as a electronic warfare weapon to jam fighter jets. So this is a story that's been spreading around the internet. I don't know why they've really focused on the F-35, but they're claiming that this X-band at 12 gigahertz could potentially allow for it to create false targets to confuse pilots. And that this, I think this is something that might be overblown a little bit, but they're talking about how some of these 6G capabilities could potentially jam aircraft. And obviously there's plenty of articles out there that are overselling this capability, but it is interesting that spectrum bands that are being utilized will probably be broader than ever. and there will probably be more advanced capabilities in the network. And I honestly, I don't think fighter jets are the problem, actually. I think drones are the problem. And we've already seen and heard Ukrainians using Russian cellular networks to deliver drones to their targets. I do think security will be a big thing for 6G, and I think it'll be important that it'd be difficult for an actor to utilize a 6G network for a drone attack.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at with 6G, but I wanted to ask you and our audience, should we start to talk 6G more than 5G, since we're already past the 5G advanced phase and most likely we'll be getting 6G-based news and developments and research, and maybe we should just transition the podcast after 5 years to a 6G podcast?
Yeah, we're considering the rebranding. We're 5 years into this. It seems like 6G is rapidly approaching. And so we invite our viewers and listeners to provide feedback directly to Anshul and I or on the various channels where we post this. Let me conclude with some final thoughts around your topic, Anshul. So I totally agree. A higher level of security beyond encryption will likely become part of the 6G standard. With 5G new radio, there was enhanced encryption. If NIST is getting involved, I'm sure they're weighing in with their desire to see some sort of zero trust network access or zero trust least privilege access imbued in whatever security standard rolls forward. NIST has defined what they believe to be a complete zero trust architecture. That's number one. Number two, you touched on silicon photonics. So for our viewers and listeners, if that's a little too technical, basically that's the underlying technology that supports optical and fiber. There is something called co-packaged optics that at GTC, NVIDIA has now lit a firestorm around with lots of investigations. NVIDIA is not the only one in town that can do CPO. You've got Marvell, Intel can do it as well. But basically what co-packaged optics do is that it provides some efficiencies in collapsing the number of components that can be integrated. That does a couple of things. Not only does it improve the performance and the throughput and the latency, but it also reduces cost and it lowers power consumption, which is a very important consideration, especially when you're looking at all of these very AI hungry workloads. I loved your topic this week, man. So I do expect that we're going to see some zero trust security goodness in future 6G standards, as well as some evolution of photonics to lower power, improve performance, and lower costs at the same time. But with that said, why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found this week's topics interesting. If anyone out there would like to provide insights on a specific 5G or 6G topic for a future podcast, please reach out to us on social media. Will's at Will Down Tech, and I'm at Anshul Sog. We hope you have a great weekend, and please tune in again next week.